The story over here is that the Mishnah says that Nun Tetzamid Beis a Magdish Besos Dei Chazero Shalom Birshus. The Mishnah speaks about what seems to be a relatively simple halacha, that a person basically brings a Gaddish. A Gaddish is going to mean a pile of grain into his friend's field without Rishus. I just sort of plopped my stuff down in his yard, a big barrel, bushel, whatever it is of hay. V'achlosim behemdo shabal hasadah. And the animal belonging to the owner of the field came along and ate the stuff that wasn't supposed to be there. So Pater, the owner, is exempt. You weren't supposed to be in my area in the slightest bit. It's not my fault that my animal went and ate. I don't have a chil of shmira on my animal in my own rishut. And you weren't supposed to be there. So what do you want me to do? I don't have to pay for that. The mehuzka ben, the animal got damaged by that gaddish, by that pile of grain that was there. The owner of the gaddish is going to be chayiv to pay for the damage that he caused to my animal. And again, if you remember, we had a blatzig on the Gemara Koder Machlokas, what exactly the nezik is that's happening. One opinion was the only time that the baal has gaddish is chayiv is if the animal had slipped on it, because if he ate it, we would say heavy leishal otocha, very good. Why was the animal going and eating? The other opinions that had mentioned, we wasn't quoted in our Gemara, but by implication, even if the animal went and ate and got damaged by eating the food, the Bala Gaddish will be chayv. That's a machlokes. Vim higdish birashos. But the Mishnah points out a chiluk. If he put the stuff in there with my permission, I told him he's allowed to pile his grain in my field. Baal hasadeh chayv. The owner of the field is going to be chayv if his animal goes and eats that stuff. Once you said, well, listen to the important line, because it's going to be the key to the next two lines of Gemara. Next quick in and out over here, Mishnah Gemara piece. If I gave rishos for you to bring your stuff into the thing, what I'm basically saying is I'm going to watch out for it also. I'm aware that it's there. I should be watching out for that. My animals and my possession shouldn't be damaging you, and I will be chayiv if anything happens. So on that note, the Gemara starts off right away with a kasha, and like I said, very in and out. Lema tanan delo kirevi. Let's suggest then that this Mishnah is not going like the Shita of Rebbe. Why? The Ikir Rebbe, because if you want to say it's like Rebbe, Ha'omar, we know Rebbe said the following chiddush. Ad sheyakabel alav baal habayis lishmor. Rebbe has, if you look on the side, it comes up in three other places in Shas aside from this. Rebbe says as follows. The mere fact that I gave you permission to come into my house, and I said, okay, that's fine, you can put your stuff down, that is not tantamount to me saying that I am going to watch out for your stuff. You want to put it in? Fine, but enter at your own risk. So Rebbe says, the only time the Balabayis is responsible, even if he gives permission for the other person to come on in, is if I expressly say, come on in, and I'll watch out for you, so I'll take care of it. But according to Rebbe, once again, if I say come in, I just mean at your own risk, I am not responsible. Now that's a machlokas. The Rabbanon, who argue on Rebbe, say that when you give rishus for someone to bring their stuff into your house, that we assume that you mean, not come on in, I'll decide if I want to destroy all your stuff. That's a little sick way of looking at it. Come on in means, come in and I'll take care of your stuff. I'm being mekabel a shmir, even though I didn't say it, but it's implicit in the rishus that I give you to come into my house. Rebbe, though, argues. And this Mishnah says, if you medayik the words very literally, the last words of the Mishnah, im higdis birishus, if he had rishus to put his pile of grain in my field, I become chayv. It doesn't say in the Mishnah that I'm chayv to pay only if I said, come on in and I'll be shomer over your stuff. It sounds like we're going not like Rebbe. So Amar of Papa, the Papa comes along and says that is not necessarily true. And we get it now into very, very interesting machlokas here. Hacha, what's going on here is the notar bei dori askina. We're speaking about a notar. Notar is a very basic Aramaic word. What does it mean? Right, to watch the guard. Where do we say it this morning during davening? One of those awkward moments once again. Kamina, let's go. He's having this morning. What? Like not like you might have even been there. No, not Kavana. Not Vuhurach.
What's the word?
Nota. Where does the word nota come up during Zavin? It's in Brishme. Very good. That's impressive. You're actually the very first person who ever got that right.
Yeah,
the
only thing that
okay, well, there you go. But you didn't get it either. Okay, so right, what?
That's
doesn't say that.
Lamintar
yasi v'yas kol dili. We ask Hashem to watch over for me, v'yas kol dili, and watch everything that's mine. A basic word, a shomer bei dori. Now, bei dori If you learned the second paragraph above Mitzvah, like when you're in fifth grade, you probably know what that means also. What was that? There you go. Okay. Looks like we paid attention in fifth grade. Shkach. Now, Nota Beidor basically means like this. If you have a shomer in a threshing floor, as Rashi describes over here, what that basically means is the way people used to do things. They had a bunch of fields out there in a valley owned by all different people, and they would appoint one person to be in charge of the basic operation. The grains are going to be harvested, reaped, and all that. They're going to be put in one central location to be processed to do the threshing, as those are professional grain people know the terminology. And the idea, though, is that this one person who has a job, who was appointed to be the shomer over the threshing area. The Gemara continues and explains why that's significant. Kevin de Omele Ayo Vigadosh. Once that shomer says, okay, put your stuff in my area and Gadosh and pile up your grains, Ayo Ve'enter Lachu, that means put it on in, bring it on up, and I'll watch. In other words, if the person is an appointed job, right, he has an official position, I am the shomer over everyone's stuff. So there, if you're a shomer over everyone's thing, it's assumed that your job, once you're saying, okay, fine, it's business hours, bring all your stuff on in, that you're saying that you're going to be shomer. In other words, the Rebbe's basically saying is like this. Okay, you have the machlokes between Rebbe and the Rabbana. When you give rishus to someone to come in, does that mean just come on in at your own risk, or does it mean I'm going to watch? But there are exceptions to that rule. You'll have certain kinds of positions where the very fact that I'm telling you, come on in, definitely means that I'm going to take responsibility for your things. The example being that the Gemara quotes is the Noter Beidare, and the person is the watchman, the shomer, over that threshing floor. Now, if you take a look in the Rush, in the back of your Gemara, it's Simon Yud. The Rush here brings a very important machlokes. Rush brings one opinion, and the Gra in his comments on that Rush note that others disagree with the Rush. The Rush says the following Kiddush. Okay? First of all, the Rush says, and this part we're not going to really discuss right now, but he notes whether or not we can be medayik at all from this Gemara that the halacha is like Rebbe, meaning to say, can we assume from the fact that the Gemara is going back and forth to try to define how Rebbe might agree with this Mishnah? Maybe that means that he's the opinion we pass on. Like, maybe yes, maybe no. Again, the Rush discusses that, and that is not the incredibly relevant part. What the Rush does say that is very relevant is as follows. He says that if you follow the pattern of our Gemara, okay, says the Rush, you notice that the Notar Beidari, the Shomer over the Beis HaGranos, the Shomer over the threshing area, has a higher level of responsibility than a regular person. Okay, how do I see that? As what was the deal that the Gemara says down over here, right? Even though Rebbe holds that giving Rishus doesn't mean I'm going to watch, but if you're Notar Beidari, if you're the person who's the Shomer over the threshing floor, and you tell a guy, come on in, that means come on in and watch. He has a higher responsibility. Says the Rush, the Rabbanon, who argue on Rebbe, and say that any time anyone gives Rishus to someone else to bring things into their property, that they automatically become a Shomer, also agree that the Notar Beidori, the official Shomer over the granaries, has a different level and higher level of responsibility, meaning to say, according to the way the Rush phrases it, that even if the person doesn't hang out a sign and say, I'm open for business, come on in and put your stuff in my area, it's known that he is the shomer over that thing. Even though he didn't say a word, if I bring my stuff into his area, he automatically assumes responsibility, despite the fact that he didn't even give a verbal reshut, even though he didn't say, okay, come on in. If that's the job, I have a right to assume he's the guy who's watching out, you put the stuff there, deposit it in the bank, so to speak, and he has a responsibility to watch. Now, the Gra points out, in his, he has a ha'ara on that rush, that the Yamshel Shlomo and others argue on that chiddush. They say, no one's going to hold, and under no circumstances can someone become a shomer and responsible for somebody else's stuff if he didn't even agree to the job. It's very nice that in general he is a shomer, but he has a vacation time, he has breaks, etc. If he doesn't say that he's open for business, you can't assume that the person is an automatic shomer just because he normally is one. And many of the Rishon, like we said before, argue on that rush. Is the question having? Yeah.
So what was the prophet saying? He said that here is the
that even though Rebbe, right, would say that you're not makabel ishmira unless you say you want to be, right? The exception to that is the Notar Beidari, the shomer over the granary, As long as he says, come on in, I'm open, right, without saying anything more than that, that means that he's accepting responsibility to be shown.
What is it, a thresh for?
You have a whole big area of fields, right? The Rashi speaks about a bicka, one big valley that has a lot of different fields in the thing, okay? They all do their harvesting and their stuff, whatever the farmers are doing out there. And when it comes time, you're doing the threshing, right? So whatever the threshing is, okay, not for now. They, instead of every little guy doing his own stuff, you had somebody who had like a business, basically, right? He's the guy who has the threshing stuff, the supplies. He has the oxen that are going to walk around with the threshing things that are going to be breaking down the grain, and everyone uses him, right? Everybody uses him as the guy down there, which means as long as he says, I'm open, bring your stuff in, he's being makabele a shmir. That's the whole chiddush. In other words, he's a guy who has that particular job, everyone knows he has a job, he knows he has a job, and therefore anything that's in his, on his lots, and his, what do you call it, his property, he is assuming responsibility for. Okay. Next mission over here. Next mission gets very involved. The mission tells us that, and here basically to the end of the paragraph, we're going to start up with the dinim and the halachos of eight. Okay, so some basic things. How are you doing, Cameron? Sorry to interrupt. Okay, now the mission says like this: the shaleich has the baby as cheresh shotev v'katan. A person sends a fire in the hands of a cheresh shotev v'katan. Okay. We're going to see in the Gemara what exactly that means, a fire. So don't take my example literally, but just to try to illustrate, the guy takes a torch, he gives it to a person who's a cheresh, a shote, a katan. The classic examples in the Mishnah is that people have no das, and you can't really control, you never know what they're going to do. And then the cheresh shote, a katan, what was that? It comes up in a couple places, very good. So that, if assuming those people go down and cause a fire and burn things down, the guy you gave the fire to, though, that the kid, to the shoteh v'katan, hey, shoteh v'katan, he's potter. In other words, we don't look at him as the actual arson, but he's chayav b'dina shemayim, because bottom line is he gave a dangerous thing into a situation that he knew in all likelihood something wrong was going to happen. It might only be a grama, etc. And the Rishonim discusses it, a grama, garmi, all those terms we mentioned in the past, but bottom line is, it's his fault that it burnt down, but he's potter because he didn't actually do the damage, but in Dini Shemayim is going to be chayv, like we had the discussion at the beginning of the parak. No, absolutely not.
Why not?
Because they're not chayv in any mitzvah. There's no, then the last bidding does. Huh?
They're not chayv in
anything. Right? Yeah. Now, the Gemara says, the Mishnah says, Shilach b'yad pikeach. But if I give a torch into the hand of a pikeach, into a regular sane person, okay, I'm assuming that the regular sane person knows that being a regular sane person, you don't go and burn down buildings. That's not what regular sane people do. Happens to be, this particular pikeach did go and burn down a building. So the rule is, the Mishnah says, a pikeach chayav, the person, the pikeach who took the torch, he's chayav, he burnt down a building. It's not my fault when I gave it to him that he burnt the building down. He wasn't supposed to do that. There's not even any reason I should assume that when I hand the guy a match or a lighter that he's going to burn down a building. If a friend comes to you, again, I'm sure these mashalim don't happen to you, but somebody comes and says, hey, can I borrow your lighter? Okay, so let's say you're in the crowd of people that you shouldn't be, that smoke. So I say, hand someone a lighter. Okay, people and I might have a lighter somewhere in my pocket, a book of matches. Okay, when I hand somebody the lighter, which I'm allowed to do, there's nothing, right, because there's no reason to assume when the guy says, can I borrow a lighter, that he's going to go down and take that and douse the building with gasoline and set it on fire. That doesn't really happen, right? So the pikeach, the guy who lit the fire, you're right, he is a criminal, he's going to be chay, but not the person who gave the thing over into his hand. Now, next halacha that the Mishnah says, echad hevi es ha'ur, ve'echad hevi es ha'etzim. If you have a situation where one guy brought an ur, brings over a little fire to an area, okay? And he's sitting there with a match burning in his hand. Now the match burning in his hand is not going to do anything, right? But somebody else comes along and brings eitzim, brings some wood, and even though the Mishnah doesn't say, but it's clear in the example, the halacha we're going to see, he happens to stick the wood in the fire, okay? In other words, he basically causes a little conflagration over there, the fire starts to spread, and nezek takes place. The Mishnah passes that the person who brought the wood, the last guy, the one who caused the problem, he is chayiv. As Rashi explains, a quick Rashi in the Mishnah, the Elav Achron, if not for that last guy, Kamalo of media. The first guy was standing here with a match in his hand. What did he do? I'm standing here with a match. I'm standing here with a candle. Well, what's the big deal? Someone who comes and sticks a log into that candle, he's the one who lit the fire. Flip side is also true. Echad hevias ha'etz and echad hevias ha'ur. One guy standing with wood in his hand, nothing wrong with holding a log in the middle of the street. Somebody comes with a fire and lights my log on fire, causing a problem. Ha'mevias ha'ur chayiv. The guy who brings the fire, he is the one who is chayiv. Right? Again, simple scenario. You're walking with anything wood in your hand, anything combustible. It doesn't have to be wood. It can be anything that can burn. Right? I'm allowed to walk out in the street with a bag in my hand, right? But someone who comes and lights fire to the bag and it causes the whole problem, the chain reaction of a lot of things burning down. The guy who set fire to my bag is chayiv, not me. There's nothing going on carrying a bag, even though the bag in theory is flammable. Okay. Next halacha. Ba acher veliba. Somebody comes and fans the fire, okay? Fuels the fire. You have a little fire, not doing anything. One little, let's say, flame that's there. Somebody comes and fans the fire, blows into the fire. It's called being malabit, okay? He fuels the fire by blowing into it. Ha-malabit chayiv, the guy who blows into the fire, causing it to take hold, to grow, and eventually spread, it's his fault. As was, nothing was going to happen with the fire. It's one little spark, one little flame, it's not going to spread, but the guy who makes it into a fire, he's the guy who's responsible. Libsa ha-ruach, though, the Mishnah says, if the wind blew the fire, I lit a little thing, I lit a barbecue, okay? And there's a little fire that's there. All of a sudden the wind blows and the thing, boom, right, starts to really, really blow. The fire jumps out of my little grill onto something else, etc., etc., etc. Everything's burning down. Kulan, Peturin, everyone there is putter. It doesn't matter if you brought the wood, he lit the original fire, it doesn't matter. The fire as it was wasn't going anywhere, but the wind came and blew it. Mamish lit the thing at Gazunta fire, and then it goes and spreads. Not my fault, the wind's fault, and I am going to be potter. Now, Tosis, you know there's a long-ish Tosis on the bottom of the page. Tosis brings a discussion. What are we talking about over here? That we say, if Libsa HaRuach Kulan Peturim, the wind is the one that fanned the fire, that everyone is going to be exempt. What exactly is the idea behind that halacha? So Tosis starts off making a comment that he thinks that the Gemara is speaking about a Ruach Mitsuya. The idea that I'm putter, okay, if the wind came and blew the fire, is even if a Ruach Mitsuya comes along, a Ruach Mitsuya in theory, we've had this expression before, is something I should have been aware might happen. That's what a Ruach Mitsuya is, the regular normal winds that are out on any random day. Nevertheless, the Re brings down in the first opinion of Tosis, even if there's a Ruach Mitsuya that fans the fire and it spreads, not my problem, I am going to be putter. Now, Tosis then be asked on the Re, but I don't really understand that halacha. The bottom line is, if it's a Ruach Mitsuya, right, and I light a fire, and in theory the fire is spread when there's wind, so why shouldn't I be chayav for that? If I light a fire in a place that there's something, okay, that it can catch hold to and start to spread, and I know that there's any normal winds that are going on out there that could, in theory, blow the fire a little bit more and cause the fire. So the basic idea is that I am Poshea. Why does the Re say that even if there's a Ruach Mitsuya, a normal common wind, I'm going to be potter? So Tosfos then comes along and says that he thinks that the correct pshat in the Mishnah is that the only time Libsa Ruach is potter is when there's a Ruach She'ein Mitsuya. If there's a totally abnormal wind, and he quotes the name of the Yerushalmi as well, those examples, you're right, I'm going to be potter. But any time there's a Ruach Mitsuya, and I lit a fire, and it could have jumped out of the grill onto that tree, whatever it is, and the tree's going to burn down, bang to the house, and the house is going to catch on fire. That's my responsibility. You want to light a barbecue in your backyard, okay? It has to be put in such a place that even in the event of a normal wind, which could happen on any given night, the fire is not supposed to be able to jump out of the grill, spread, and catch on fire. Again, a Ruach She'ein Mitsuya, that's not my problem. I didn't really do anything over there. And then I'm going to be putter like the Mishnah says, according to the end pshat in the toast. Okay, that's the Mishnah. The Gemara now quotes a machlokis amongst the Amoraim. It says like this: Amrei Shlokish Mishmei the Chizki. We quote Chizki as having a tinning that says, "Lo shana ala shemosa lo gacheles v'liba." This halacha we had in the Mishnah. If you give a cheresh shota v'katan, a fire, okay, and he burns something down, that you're going to be putter midine adam, even though you knew that something might happen. is only true if you gave him a coal that he was liba, that he fanned the coal, fire light spreads, and he had the problem. Then you put it. Of a muscle, no shall have it. But if I gave the cheresh shows of a katan, an actual flame, I hand him a candle with a flame. Now a flame already, that can burn by itself. All he has to do is touch it to something. Says Chizkiah, chayev. I am a chayev in dine adam for handing the cheresh a flame knowing that it's going to burn down. My time of why? Ma'asav kagormelo. It is my actions that cause the fire. You give the cheresh shows of a katan a live flame, you know that they're not responsible. You know that. That's dangerous. That's your fault. You give him a coal. Why in the world should I think that? If I give a kid a coal, they're going to end up burning down a house. That's not normal. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, no, I disagree. Afilu Masala shall have this is possible. Even if I give him a flame, I'm exempt. My time of why? Savta de Cheresh Garmalo. Rabbi Yochanan argues, Rashi translates the word Savta as a sevet. So it means a tongue. What that means is Savta de Cheresh Garmalo. I didn't do anything. It's called a grama. I gave it to him. He went along and put the fire on something else. In other words, it's his tongue, it's his hands that were walking around causing the fire. That is still called a grama on my part. I am exempt. But lo mechayiv, I'm only chayiv at sheyimsilo gavza. If I give the cheresh three things. Number one, gavza Rashi says a kosim. I give him some thorns. I give him silta at the top of the next page. Eitzim dakim, Rashi says. I give him some kinder, some small little twig that I'm going to catch on fire, and a shraga, and a hand on the fire. Dehu, in that example, vandei maisa di dei garmo. That's for sure that your actions caused the fire. You hand him flammable stuff. In modern day terms, you call it, you hand him a thing of gasoline, okay? One of those things, the flame things that you use to light a barbecue, and you give them some newspapers or some tinder, you give them some small pieces of wood and a match, that already you cause a problem. Even Rabbi Yochanan is going to agree that you are chayef. Okay, so we basically have a machlokas, the way the Shita Mekubetzes quotes and explains in the Shita, you have a machlokas here, what stage in the game do we differentiate between the balabayas being a grumma situation versus actually standing in motion a fire through his actions. The first sheet that says, giving him a flame, that's already called my fault. The flame can light. A flame is already on fire. A coal, as he says, you're positive for, because the coal is not even a fire. How do you get the fire? That's his thing. That's not me. You give him the flame, that's something that can burn by itself. That's not called grama. That is called a real maisa of burning something down, knowing that the guy's going to walk around and be irresponsible. Rabbi Yochanan then comes along and argues, and he says, absolutely not. The flame by itself, well, what's the flame really going to do? One little candle is going to burn something down? I'll call even that a grumma. It's very big kiddush. Even that's just called a grumma. You give the guy, though, the combustible stuff, flammable material, the gasoline, the fire, the matches, everything, then already you have a real problem. That stuff is definitely going to spread, and that's your fault. Yeah, again, my machlok has had a look at what stage in the game you're more directly involved versus less. Okay. The Mishnah goes, I want to try to get at least to the two dots in Samach Omer Aleph over here. The Gemara is actually incredibly, that's not really true. From the Mishnah on, it's incredibly easy. Up until the Mishnah, there's a little bit more tricky, and we can make it even trickier if we want to. We'll see how we're all doing as we go along. Some nice pieces here. The Mishnah had a din. If you send the fire to the Bekeach is chayiv, it's his fault, not mine. He should have known what he was doing. And then it goes on and speaks about if you're malabeh, if you fan the fire, you are going to end up being chayiv. Okay? The Mishnah just points out a grammatical thing, it's in terms of vocabulary words. Omer Rav Nachman by Yitzchok, mandatani liba lo mishtabesh, and mandatani niba lo mishtabesh. Anyone who would learn that the word was liba lo mishtabesh is not making a mistake. Mandatani niba, if somebody had a tradition, or they used the word niba to denote a fanning of a fire, lo mishtabesh is also not erring. Okay? Mandatani liba lo mishtamish. If you use the word liba, that's not a mistake. That's a puzzling in the chumash. It's siv, but labas eish, when you fan the fire. Mandatani niba lo mishtamish. It's siv, we have another puzzle. Borei nivis vasayim. The Navi says Hashem was the borei, the creator of nivis vasayim, of the movement and the breath of the lips. As Rashi points out, that's why some people, in terms of the word that was used to speak about fanning a fire, use the word niba. If you move your mouth, blow on the fire, when the fire is going to burn. Okay, very nice. A discussion what the exact word is meant to be. You can remember that for your Opan days on next Sunday. Anyone go to Opan out of this room? That's a definite no, right? Okay, as normal. Right, it says the Gemara like this. Love the Ruach Kulam Petunim. Mishnah at Din. Love the Ruach. The wind blows and fans the fire. You're going to be potter. And let's remember, according to the Tosafot, we're speaking about a Ruach She'ena Mitzuyah. So some form of an onus. The Braita says, Tanur Rabbanan. And here's where it gets a little bit tricky. I'm going to try to incredibly simplify the Gemaras over here as much as we can. And you'll notice that all of the Tosafot are on the page. Numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 are all going to be on the next basic 6 lines of Gemara over here. There's a lot of stuff going on. Again, we're going to try to keep the simplest post-beach day pshatim that we possibly can. Tanur Rabbanan, the Braita says, Liba v'libisah ruach. I fan the fire. The lib is the haruach, and the wind was also fanning the fire. The Mishnah said, the Braita says rather, "Emyesh b'libuyok today lila bosa." Okay, a lot of lamed days was there. If your libu, if you're fanning the fire, had today lila bosa, you were blowing into the fire enough that it could have lit with my breath alone. Chayav, then I'm going to be chayav. In other words, I don't care that the wind was also blowing. The bottom line is, I myself could have been the one to have caused this fire. And I was blowing the fire, I'm going to be chayav. V'im lav, but if not, in other words, if my blowing alone could not cause the fire is only created through the assistance of the wind that was also blowing, I am going to be potter. The basic reason why I'm potter is going to be what? Was it me who went and did it, right? If I needed to come onto the wind, but that's not me, though. The wind was assisting. That's why the Gemara comes along and says, but I disagree. I'm going to show you a proof, the Gemara says, where when you blow into whatever it is, knowing basically that the wind is there, seeing the wind is there, etc., that is called your action. Amai, why you exist? Lehevi kezore v'ruach misayata. Why should you be any different than a case of a guy who's winnowing, one of the other malachos on Shabbos? A winnowing or farm folk over here means what? Throwing stuff in the wind and then that blows the bad away. Very good. Okay, we're getting all technical. Very, very nice. Now, when you do winnowing, the malach of Zorah on Shabbos, by definition, I'm not really doing all that much by myself. I'm throwing the stuff up in the air. What causes the chaff and the bad junk to fly away? The wind. But nevertheless, I'm getting killed. I'm chayv skila for doing an act of Zorah. So it's clear, the Gemara is asking, that despite the fact that the wind is assisting the process, but that's right, when the wind assists the process, but you started it, you were involved, that's already called your action. That's a malach on Shabbos. Why shouldn't you be chayav for nezek when you blew into the fire? Okay, alone, I wouldn't have done anything, but the wind is blowing. Why is it any different than the malach of Zoreh on Shabbos? The Gemara gives a number of terutim, and each one of them, if you're really learning the Gemara as well, you have to figure out what the machlokas in between the different terutim are, etc. It relates back to Hilchos Nezikin, to Hilchos Shabbos. There's a lot of things that happen over here in these sugya. Amar Abaye says, first answer is, Hach b'mayaskin, what's the case over here? Kegon sheliba mitzad echad, belibso ruach mitzad achil. The Abaye comes up with a new kimta, okay? Very quickly, basically what Abaye says is, the question is a good question, right? If I blow into the fire and the wind is assisting the fire spread, I should be chayiv. The reason why I'm not chayiv in this case is not because the premise of the question is wrong. The premise of the question is right. The reason why I'm not chayiv in this case is because of a simple ukimta. What we're establishing the case was, I'm blowing in this direction. The wind is blowing in that direction. So, if I blow weakly in such a way that the fire is not going to be spreading over here, but it does end up that the fire starts to go over there and spread, you can't say, Abaye says, that my breath into the fire was the one that caused the fire to spread, because Lamaya, so the wind was the one who blew it in the opposite direction of my thing. That is not me. I am Pata. But again, what's important for the overall sugya is not so much the ukimta that Abaye gives, as much as the fact that he is clearly agreeing that the basic question and comparison that's made is a decent comparison. We have to finagle ourselves out of the case. Or Rava Amar, Rava is a different pshat. Kegon sheliba beruach mitzuya. Case could be that when you blew, you were blowing, and again, your breath, like the Braita said, was not enough to fan the fire and make it spread. And there was a ruach mitzuya out there that also wasn't going to cause the fire to spread. No. But libso a ruach beruach she'ena mitzuya. But what happened was, was that a ruach she'ena metsuya comes by. A mass of wind that doesn't normally happen. Sand, the fire, blows over the fire, causes it to spread. You can't say, again, according to Rava, you can't say that it's like the malach of Zohar, that I'm tapping into the natural energy, to the wind, and to my actions. What do you mean? Well, what you did, and with the wind that was blowing at the time, nothing should happen. A big tornado comes by and whisks the fire away. That's just not your fault. Rabbi Zeira Omar Kigon to Samra Simure. Similar idea, again, similar meaning to say that I agree that there's a basic comparison between Hilchos Shabbos and the Nezikin. Why wouldn't you say that if I tap in to the natural wind that I should be chayiv? But Samra Simure, Rashi says that means that I'm warming the fire. Okay? That's why Rashi translates the word semer. What that means is, according to Rashi, that, according to many of the Rishonim, that I'm not actually sitting and blowing into the fire, but the same way, if you're ever outside in the cold and you want to warm your hands up, I'm not sure what the exact technical word is, you can put your hands by your face and you sort of blow from somewhere in your chest, like in the back of your throat, a warm little breath, not a, but a, no, sorry, right? Just, well, is anyone more when you warm your hands? Right. So I blew into the fire in that kind of a warming kind of a way, the way Rashi explains. Now that should not really have caused the fire to blow. That's not called the malabet, the fire. I blew, that's true. But my blowing should not have caused the fire to lit. The wind comes by and lights the fire. You're right, that is not my fault. But Rav Ashi comes along and says a very sweeping conceptual rejection of the question. Rav Ashi says, I think you are wrong in your question. When do we say that if the person is winnowing with the wind helping him out, that he's chayiv, it's like he did the malach, he's tapping into the natural energy and it's all his fault? Hanimilin and Shabbos. That's the halacha in Hilchos Shabbos. The Meleches Machsheves Asra Torah. Very famous phrase. The Torah asks is what's called Meleches Machsheves. I'm going to translate right now as planned out Malacha. What Rashi explains that means here in this context is Miskaima Machashavto Denichale Baruch Misayato. Rashi explains my plan, the Malacha of winnowing, was achieved when the wind is blowing, because that's the way to do the Malacha Ruach Misayato. You need the wind to help you out. So in Hilchos Shabbos, the idea of a Malacha is if you're doing the Malacha in the normal way, and you get your desired result, you've now winnowed, separated, etc., the bad from the good. That's what they did in the Mishkan. That's how you do that job. Good, you're chayiv. Meleches machsheves. That's the plan. That's the blueprint, the structure for that malacha. You do your part, winnow this part, boom, you're chayiv. Aval hacha, but over here by Nezikin. Grama ba'almu. All I'm doing when I blow a wimpy blow into the fire that can't do anything is a grama. And the rule is, Grumma ben Ezekiel is Pater. Grumma ben Ezekiel is Pater. When I cause damage, but it's only in a secondary, causal kind of a way, that's not my fault. So I blow into the fire, nothing happens. Okay, there's a little flame, but nothing's really going anywhere. The wind now came and took advantage of that flame, which wasn't going to travel by itself, and spreads it. That's not really me. You might say Hilchos Shabbos, that would be called a Meleches Zoreya. You're right, the natural energy is there, but it doesn't make a difference. I didn't do it over here directly. And therefore, I am going to end up being potter, again, potter in the Tashlumin. Now, Tosus here quotes in the bottom of the Tosus, a very interesting thing that he says. And this answer of the Gemara seems to be the what we're calling the maskana of most of the Rishonim. The basic question is getting rejected over. You can't compare the halachas of Shabbos with the wind and Zorah to the halachas of Nezikin. And Tosus brings down, based on that, in a small little Tosus, this is the easiest one to do out of all the Tosus, and he brings down a very interesting halacha that would come out of this. He says you have two people. One guy brings the wood. One guy brings a fire. Okay? Fire and wood mash together, and it's going to start to blow. And they both sit there and do a half-baked blowing into the fire. Two halves make a hole, and with their mutual wimpy blowing, the fire spreads and burns something down. Neither guy had a kedei l'laboso, neither guy blew in strong enough that the fire should have caught and spread. The Tosa says, you're going to be potter. Why you potter? Neither of us actually did the action of blowing the fire. It's a degrama. It was my half and your half. That's true. Tosa ends with a very interesting comment. The last two words, that small Tosa, is a tamehu. It's very hard to understand why that should be true. The mice of the fire grew and spread because of the two of you. The fact that you each contributed only half He says that logically, you're right, that seems to have to be a kind of a grama. On the other hand, Tosa says, but it's hard to imagine. Anyone who wants can now go burn down buildings and never have to pay. Just call your friend over and the two of you blow together into the thing and all of a sudden you put it. It sounds very strange. Technically, it might be a grama. Hard to imagine, Tosa says, that should be true, even though he seems to say that is true, even though he has a hard time accepting that as the halacha. Okay. That is the story, the first chunk of Gemara over here. Now, if you have time in the Beis Medrash, and you should have time in the Beis Medrash, the top Tosas, the top two Tosas in, are not incredibly difficult. It should be a relatively easy read. Certainly, Chashuvim of your stature should be able to handle this without that much of a problem. And Tosas basically walks you through the stage by stage of the Gemara, what the Havamin is, what exactly the case is, what each one of the answers is trying to accomplish. It's a nice Tosas, again, an easy read, and I would definitely recommend you trying to make sure to do that during the Beis Medrash time like that, after the Chumash, whatever it is, and then you get down to the Tosas over here and try to know them pretty well. Okay. Right, the last piece of Gemara we're going to do tonight is the Gemara up into the two dots. We're going to introduce the next piece over here, and it's actually tomorrow we're starting with some Agadot until for a while, actually, most of tomorrow night. But so let's at least get the Gemara parts down over here. Says the Mishnah, Hashaleach es ha be'era v'ochle eitzim o avanim o offer. Person lights a fire. The expression always is, he sends the fire, lights a fire that spreads. The fire consumed wood, okay, that's what fires do. Avonim, it started to burn stone. It gets the stone all black and destroyed. It doesn't burn it, the stone's not going to disappear in fire, but it gets ruined in the fire. Ofar, or the fire singes the ground. That was in Rashi points out that's significant because in Niskalkia, the field that the fire had just burned is a bit ruined. There's ash, there's other stuff that's there in the field. It's not the same. Okay, so I did damage. The Mishnah says, Allah is your chayiv for any one of those things. His stones got destroyed because of the fire. Okay, you're going to be chayiv. The wood, certainly. You have the field that gets burnt and sinned. You're also going to be chayiv for that. Shenema says, ki say, say, h. If a fire goes out, the fire finds, meaning takes hold of and burns, thorns. Nechal Gadish. There's a Gadish, a pile of grain that gets consumed. O Hakamo, the standing, still, what do you call it? Still attached grain. O Asad, or an entire field gets burned down. Shalim Yishalim Hamaziret HaBe'ira, the person who lit the fire, he has to pay. And the Gemara is going to dash it as we go along over here, that each one of these examples in the Pasuk is meant to be bringing out one of the examples that we quoted in the Mishnah of something getting burned that's not really the norm to get burned, and nevertheless you're going to be chayav. Okay, quickly through the Gemara. I'm flying through this now. Amar Rav, Rava says, Lama li dekasa rachmana kotsim gadish kama v'sada. Why does the Torah have to give, how many examples over here? Kotsim, gadish, kama, four different examples of things that get burned down. Say, if a fire spreads and burns things down, you have to pay. Pretty simple pasuk. Why do you need all the examples? As the Gemara three says, you need them all. Each one is bringing out a chiddush about the dinam of H. Because of Rachmana, Kotsim, and the Torah said, Yechayiv, if the fire burns on thorns, heavy, I mean, I would have said, Kotsim, hu dechiyev Rachmana, the Torah is mechayiv to pay for the thorns, mishum deshchiyach eish gabayu, because thorns are commonly things that get burned, one of the simplest things to burn, etc. And as Tosis, as Rashi points out, that people aren't even necessarily going to be so careful around the thorns that are there. You weren't careful, you have to pay. But, what am I? Huh? And it's very normal that the Gemara says that a person might be pasha, that he might be a little bit negligent. Which in the, what do you call it, in terms of the fire and the thorns. You have thorns all around, people carry fires, a guy might mess up. And again, the Torah is saying you have to pay because we don't want you to mess up. Aval Gadish. We have an example of a pile of grain that gets burnt down. The Loshliyah, that's not so normal. People don't always walk around with torches around their bales and say they're sitting out there in the field. That's not so common. So Kasav Rachmana Gadish. The Torah says, no, you chayiv for that also. I don't care that it's not normal for people to walk around with torches next to bales of hay. If the guy did, chayiv. Okay. So where, what do I keep on losing my place over here? Boom. Did I skip a line? Is that what I did? Huh? You know, he just skipped the line, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. About Gadish, but a Gadish lo shliach eish gabayu. It's not normal for the fire to be there. But lo shliach the pasha. And therefore, it's by extension, it's not going to be so normal for me being negligent in those areas. Again, I don't walk around the torch by the fire. Aim a low, so maybe they know that you're not chayiv today. Okay, the Torah says you're chayiv for Gadish also. Because of Rachman and Gadish, the Torah just said you're chayiv for the pile of grain. Had they mean I would have said Gadish, he gave Rachman and the Torah obligates you to pay for Gadish for a pile of grain. Mishum de hefsein muru, because that's a big loss. The guy lost a whole pile of this stuff, you got to pay. Okay, well, coats him, but thorns, the hefsein muat, oh, small little loss. How much can a bag of thorns cost? Aim a low. I might have thought, no. Okay, so the Torah says you chayiv to pay for the thorns as well. Kama lomali. The Gemara says, why does it tell us the same chayiv for burning down standing stalks of grain? In other words, connected to the ground. Well, we're learning another halacha. Ma kama begalui. What do I find? What's the property of the standing attached grains of wheat? Begalui. They're out there in the open, in the field. Askol begalui. So too, and this is the famous drasha where this comes up in Shas. How do we know that tamun be'esh is pater? And the word kama. A kama is begalui. Askol begalui. So too, anything that is open and revealed to the naked eye, you're chayiv for. And that's why the Torah comes along now over here and says, that's what he called. That to be chayiv, it has to be begalui, not tamun. But Rabbi Yehuda is mechayiv in iskei tamun be'esh. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, argument says, no, you pay for things that are hidden beneath other things when it comes to fire. Kama lamali. So what is the Torah trying to teach me by expressing that if the fire burns down a standing stalk of grain, then I'm chayiv? So it says the Gemara Kappa, L'rabos kol ba'ali koma. Know what we're including over here? Any ba'al koma. What Rashi translates that to mean as that you're not chayiv for standing stalks, but anything that stands. What does it mean that stands? So Rashi gives two examples. First of all, trees that are there. High, beautiful, tall trees standing straight up. Doesn't say there's only chayiv for trees. Or kol ba'al koma, Rashi says, could mean animal. Doesn't say there's such a chayiv if an animal gets burned down the age. How do I know? Kama, that's a standing thing. I stand, you stand, animal stands. Good, you're chayiv for that. V'rabbanan, l'rabbos kol ba'al koma minolahu. How do the rabbanan know that you're chayiv to pay for any standing thing, whether it's a tree or an animal or a person even? Naskaluhu may o hakama. They darshan up from the extra word o. Classic drasha. Reb Yehuda o mi boy leila chalik. Reb Yehuda argues back. No. I hold that tamun is potter. Excuse me, is chayiv on eight. That's what you learn up from the word kama. However, what's the word o coming along and teaching me there? That teach me lachalik to differentiate between the different examples, which means what? Classic phrase in the Gemara, l'chalik. Any clue what it means? What does it technically mean? In other words, it actually has a technical meaning over here. If the Torah says that I'm chayiv, look at the pasuk according to Mishnah. Necha, matza kotzim, necha gadish, hakama oasadeh. Okay? If you didn't have the word o, I would get the impression that the only time I'm chayiv for the fire is if I did what? Burnt down. There you go. Burn down all of those things combined. That's why the Torah sticks in the word or means either this or that. One thing at a time you're going to be chayiv for. I, but Rabbanan lechalig minolahu. How did the Rabbanan learn out that principle that you're not chayiv only if you burn down all four of those examples? Nafkalumi o hasodeh. There's a second word o that's there in the pasuk. That's where they learned out the idea of lechalig from. Reb Yehuda says, no, that's not true. I do the Kasav Rachmana, O Hakama. Once the Torah has to write O Hakama, which again is including for me which halacha according to you, the O Hakama? Huh? That you're chayiv on the Tum and Be'esh, okay. So therefore the Gemara says like this, where am I? Sada Lamali. But why do I need now the word Sada? What is that going to teach me? We're going down a field, I'm chayiv. Okay, that's coming to include if the near, you know what near means? Very famous word in Eretz Yisrael. A lot of places with the name near, that's it. What? That's near. What is near? Near means a plowed field, a worked field. So lichacha nero means if the fire singes the dirt that you were plowing. or sichtecha avana. The Torah singes the dirt that you wanted to plant into. Okay, I didn't destroy food. It just sort of field got a little bit messed up, and that's what I learned from the word oh hasada. That you have to watch out for even those things that are mamish dirt on the ground. Asked the Gemara a classic reverse question. Wasn't the Torah just right that you're chayiv for burning on a field and all the other things that you'd be able to figure out? Like this? So no, that's not going to work. Each one of these things is necessary and teaches in the Yechidah. Because the Rachmanah saw that the Torah only wrote you chayiv for the field and have the amino, mashiv saw that in media, clean and low. That I'm only chayiv for those things which actually grow out there in the field like grain. Other things that are out in the field, who says? So Kamash Milan, that's why we need the expression, oh, I saw that, anything in the field. Omer Shimon ben Achmeini, Omer Reb Yonatan. I have a little agadah to end on. Ein puranos ba'ola ola eluz mancha reshoyim ba'ola ve'eino, eluz mancha reshoyim ba'ola. Puranos, tragedy comes to the world when there are wicked people in the world. In addition, Einam aschelas, einam atzadikim, elamin atzadikim tzila. And where do the calamities, chalil v'chas, begin? By the tzaddikim, they get smacked up first. And then, like it says in the pasuk, kiseitzei eish, fire goes out. Again, that's going to be an example, as we're about to see, umatza kotzim, or and find the kotzim. A mosai eish yotza. When is there going to be a fire coming from heaven? A fire symbolizing the piranhas, the tragedies and the negative things. When's the fire going to come out? Bizman shekotzim mitsuyin la, when you have the thorns frequent, the thorns around, which is obviously a mashal for Rishayim. The Eina Maschelas Enemen Tzadikim Tchila, and then it says, and the tragedy starts by Tzadikim, Shemar says, V'nechal Godish. It says, if it consumed a Godish. V'achal Godish lo Nemar. It doesn't say in the past tense, the fire burned or ate the Godish. V'nechal Godish. The Godish was eaten. A little bit of a strange terminology. Shenechal Godish Kfar. And that's coming and teaching me that if the Godish, you know, Godish again meant what? Remember what the literal translation of the word was? A heap. But it actually not the literal translation of the word. Literally, the word Godish means an overflowing pile, a big stack of something. So if you have a Jew who is Godish, what's he going to be overflowing, filled with? Torah, mitzvahs, etc. Nechal Godish. The person who's the Godish is going to get messed up first by the piranhas that comes along. And again, so basically the principle of the Gemara is saying is, you watch out. Whenever there's trouble, a gezeira in the world, you know that some of the tzaddikim are going to end up being affected by that based on this Gemara. Okay, whatever the chesbon is of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, and Shemayim are, but you want to watch out for that kind of a thing. Right, that's true. But the Gemara is a klal that it doesn't say it over here, but the klal elsewhere in the Gemara that the kivan shenitan reshus for mashkes v'hashkes. Once the Kadosh Baruch Hu gives reshus for the disease, something destructive to happen, no one's exempt, and the tzaddikim are as equally in danger. The chiddush of this Gemara is that the Kadosh Baruch Hu actually goes to them first, like that. The Gemara says onwards as well. Let's get a little bit more. We have a couple of minutes, so let's go by. Let's read some of the pages. The Tanur Rabbanan at the beginning. The Gemara is very easy. Okay, the sugi we just quoted. Tani Reb Yosef Yosef taught. My Yosef was going to be most safe in the Pesach base to Adboka. Don't leave the house by the time of the Pesach in Mitzrayim till the morning. The explanation is Kevin Chenita Rishus Mamashkes. Once Rishus was given to the destructive angels. It doesn't differentiate between righteous people and evil people. Don't leave. Don't expose yourself to the danger. Kadosh Baruch Hu sends the pranas first to the tzaddikim. Shenemar it says, "V'chrati mimcha tzaddik v'rasha." Hashem says to the Navi Yechezkel, "I'm going to cut off from you tzaddik and rasha." Who's getting cut off first? The tzaddik. Now, Bachi Rabbi Yosef says he starts to cry and says, Kulei hai nami la'ayim domin. The Gemara says, so much, the tzaddikim are going to have to face. Rashi explains what that means is, Kilomer, lehevo chashuv ma tzaddikim, shekod me paranos. The tzaddikim are going to look like nothing. It's like ridiculous. You'd be a tzaddik, you get killed first. That's hard to understand. Amalei Abayi, Abayi says back, Tivusu hulagabayi, it's a good thing for them. They says, Kimi pineya ra'o ne'asaf ha-tzadik, the tzadik is getting gathered in face of the wrath. What Rashi says, what that means is, is that tzaddikim, even if they get pained and sick and even killed in this world, are being removed from the world, the way Rashi explains, not to see the eventual issues and aveiros and problems that are going to happen in Olam Hazeh. Okay. Omer of Yehuda, Omer Rav. They quote Rav as saying as follows. And by the way, the very interesting thing there was, if you look through the numbers, and again, perhaps as it gets closer to the Yom HaShoah period and all of that, there was a very interesting phenomenon that many of the Gedolim, the older Gedolim in particular, Mamash died at the beginning of World War II, before the calamities of the Holocaust became totally widespread. That's part of the idea found in this Gemara, the way Rashi explains it. Because Baruch Hu brings a Puranas to the big tzaddikim, so they shouldn't have to see the negatives that are going to face the people. And obviously, there are exceptions to that law, as we all know. Omer Rav Yehuda, Omer Rav, we taught a little bit of a Musar-ish, what do you call it, idea. Le'olam yikanes adam b'kitov, v'yetze b'kitov. A person should go inside, should end a trip. B'kitov. Rashi points out that is a remez. The first time the Torah speaks about kitov is when? Hashem saw what? V'yara, the first day. V'yara l'kim es or kitov, right? So now, you should make sure to get in. Stop your trip, the ketov, when the good light is still outside. The yetze b'kitov, you shouldn't leave in the morning until it's light. Make sure to stay in, leave after the sun comes up. Shneamar, it says, v'atim lo seitzu ish mipesach beso ad boker. And his Baruch Hu tells the Jews, don't leave until morning. The whole makas b'choros is taking place when, according to the Chumash? Not in the chatzos light, the mamish in the middle of the night. No. Stay in until the morning. Why? Not just because of the makas b'chor. This is a general issue, like Rashi says over here. There's always some more mazikim, or there are listim, Rashi says, there are robbers that are out there at night. So it's traveling advice, a traveler's warning. Don't leave in the middle of the night. You're going to be subjecting yourself to possible muggery and robbery and other stuff, and we don't want you to go and try to do it. So what it goes, to get in trouble. Therefore, the person should follow the Chazal's advice and not be traveling at night. And all of the contemporary poets have pointed out that those things obviously only apply at times when it's actually dark, etc. And it's a little bit scary today. There's nothing going on getting in a car, turning on the lights in the car with street lights, etc. The pressure to make sure to be back by day and to stop a trip in the middle of the day is not necessarily so applicable anymore. Nevertheless, that is the advice that Chazal had given us. And again, we're going to call the Gemaras over here. Tomorrow night we have straight Agada at the time, and that's going to cover us. I have to see how far we can actually get tomorrow. We'll pass the next Mishnah also. And that is that. Let's get back to Beis Medrash Chevra and go learn. I think it's rather nice tonight.